Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
What's going on, Jermaine Johnson? Tune in to Turn on the Jets podcast.
Hey, this is Vinny Pasquantino of the Kansas City Royals. Make sure you tune into the Turn on the Jets podcast.
Everybody, welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPod11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Another episode. I think we're approaching the episodes in the 200s or 300s at this point of times I've been hosting this podcast, and I can't believe I'm saying how excited I am for a 1-3 Jets team to visit a 1-3 Broncos team. A normal, in spirit of Bill Simmons, a normal poopfecta game actually has a lot of meaning, and it's probably one of those games that, coming off a loss, going to play a team when you're 1-3 should not feel this exciting, but it in fact does. Brad Spielberger, as always, hops on with me. A busy day in the NFL. Brad, how are we doing today?
Yeah, doing great. Yeah, like you said, a couple transactions coming down the wire, and I weirdly am excited for this game as well.
Yeah, it's a game that I think going into the year, the Jets and Broncos do have a lot of similarities and a lot of things that happened last year with the Broncos. Really good defense, had a lot of things they thought were in place. They get the big name quarterback. Obviously, there's other differences that have happened. Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson's seasons were very different. And Nate Hackett is now the Jets OC, not Sean Payton, Mr. Walmart money himself, in Denver. I do want to talk about the Jets-Chiefs game a little bit and kind of wrap this up. I feel like I was more frustrated because I feel like the Jets let one get away on Sunday. And I know the officials, and I'm going to ask you about it quickly, but my take, just for, kind of recapping what I said, I think that the biggest issue wasn't necessarily the actual call itself. It's the timing of when the flag came out. Felt very, Mahomes threw a pick, and Mahomes' excuse that he threw the ball up was certainly a funny one from Patrick. He gets to get away with it because he's amazing, but that's a total bullshit answer. But more importantly, it's the fact that they let them play all night, and there was a bunch of other missed calls that egregiously led to a massive Chiefs touchdown on third down, the Jermaine Johnson call early in the game. I'm not even touching the holding call on the last drive. The Jets still could have gotten off the field, and the Jets still should have caught a touchdown in the end zone. Garrett Wilson and Zach Wilson should have connected on that one that was open. They didn't get 3 points in two separate drives. They should have. Mosley dropping an intercept. Like, the Jets left the game, they played really well, and they competed with the champs. They've now been incredible against Allen and Mahomes, which they play them better than I've seen anybody play, either guy. That's not just me saying it. The stats back it up. All that to be said, what'd you make of Sunday? Because yes, there was the Zach positive stuff, but again, I still feel like they let one get away even more so than they did, the week before against New England.
Yeah. It would have been a massive confidence boost to have that performance from Zach in a win against the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm sure he'll still take a lot of good from it, as he should. But it really, when you don't have the win, when that fumble, you said so many edge cases, but he obviously, probably a good thing, takes credit, takes all the blame for the fumble, on the snap late in the game, which again, another thing they could have maybe not done, but he was pretty darn good otherwise. And yeah, that is a bottom 10 graded game for Patrick Mahomes we've ever had. Any stat you look at, he was struggling all night. He really didn't even seem confident and comfortable. Throwing a lot of turf missiles and just off with his velocity, off with his touch. And I think it was because he was, under a barrage of pressure at times. And also just, you look at a lot of the coverage snaps in all 22 and guys were just blanketed. The secondary was really just not letting anyone create separation against them. Quincy Williams was awesome. CJ Mosley, like you said, had the dropped interception, but played well, limiting stuff over the middle. Yeah, it was a tough one. They really could have won that game, and that would have been, like you said, I mean, you basically, if you can do that to Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, and then Zach Wilson can start to play some quarterback, optimism would be at an all-time high after it may have been at an all-time low, you know, a week ago.
It's almost like me and you picked the Jets to win the division for a good reason, you know, before obviously Rodgers got hurt. I do want to touch on this offensive line quickly. I talked a lot about it. The grades hadn't come out yet. You know, I hadn't gotten a full chance to watch the All-22. I went back and watched it, obviously. Joe Tippmann and ABT together has been as good of a partnership as we've seen from a right guard and right tackle the last 2 weeks. Like, they're really good, and they're both under 24 years old. And, you know, both guys can play multiple positions and the whole thing. Lincoln Tomlinson has not so subtly been way better the last 2 weeks, probably two of his better weeks he's had as a Jet. And I don't think that is not a consequence that because he's playing next to Mekhi Becton, who's kind of – they kind of – like, this whole line playing together multiple weeks, and there's a lot of high-ceiling guys on this offensive line. And the fact that they're getting weeks together is actually pretty impressive. I still think center is a huge weak spot for them. It just seems like when bad plays happen, it always is the same guy that's kind of scrambling to go get his guy, pick his guy up off of the running back or the quarterback. But what do you make of this offensive line? I know, again, I don't want to touch too much on Zach because it's a lot of like, it was 1 week. We got to see it again. He did play well in structure, but it had a lot to do with the fact that the O-line, Zach felt comfortable back there, and you could tell he was hitting his 3, 5, and 7-step drops planning and the ball's out.
This is going to be fascinating because I don't think you can take Joe Tippmann off the field when Dwayne Brown does come back. So do you move him to center? And then I think the annoying thing there is, do you not want a rookie center with Zach Wilson? Is he dealing with enough already? Yes, McGovern has not been very good, but, you know, pre-snap and calling out protections and things like that, you'd have to imagine he probably is a benefit, you know, to a degree in that area. So, and then if you don't move Tippmann to center, okay, does Becton come out of the lineup? Because you're not taking AVT off the field, obviously. So would it then be Dwayne Brown left tackle, AVT right tackle, Tippmann right guard? I don't really see how you do that either. So maybe he should start taking snaps under center and figuring that out, because I just don't see how you take Tippmann off the field.
Yeah, I'm actually a proponent of just not changing anything. Especially if they have a nice week this week and they play well against Philly, because that's the real test, right? Like, this week, this is the first time they have an advantageous matchup going into, like, they should be able to run block and pass block. And if they don't, and if they do a good job, and you do well enough against Philly, who's one of the best fronts in the league, and we'll talk about that next week when we get there, but how do you change that? Because that'll be 4 weeks in a row against three really good fronts where you start to look really competent and impressive. And again, the whole problem with the Jets O-line, and this is a one side topic before we get to looking forward to Denver, was it wasn't necessarily the talent they invested in. It was a lot of guys, though, that felt like they can play a lot of positions, but can they play one really well? Was one issue. And then two is either guys that were on the older side of their career or injury prone, right? Like, that was kind of the issue with, you know, you look at Dwayne Brown. Dwayne Brown's got a borderline. He's a Hall of Famer, but he's a Hall of Very Good player, right, for his career, multiple-time All-Pro and durable and all that stuff. And his body eventually might have broken down, and it did last year and then this year. And Mekhi Becton, whose ceiling is a top-five left tackle, but we hadn't seen him play in 2.5 years, 3 years. That's a kind of where it came back, is Lincoln Tomlinson's been very up and down his whole career, and, like, you're kind of recounting on the good. So that's kind of where I think the frustration was. It wasn't the investment in the O-line. It was who they invested in. But again, as you said, like, this group should still be pretty – even if they're a league average group the rest of the year, and if Zach Wilson's the 23rd best quarterback in football and not the 39th, like, it could still make the playoffs based on, you know, how the schedule opens up, because there's a really soft window starting from Sunday all the way through week 12 or 13, I believe.
Yeah, no, it really was, like we talked about. I mean, that's one of the weaknesses we're pointing to. And if that becomes not a strength, or, I mean, frankly, I think a league average offensive line is a strength. And I think a lot of teams across the league would be happy with a league average offensive line. And then you have depth. You know, Dwayne Brown comes back. Say, okay, you're our backup left tackle. I don't know about swing tackle at this point in his career, but maybe. I probably wouldn't count on it. But it's just another, you know, thing to have in your holster to be able to rely on in the back end if something does happen to Becton or Tucker or whatever. So, yeah, I agree with you. And the schedule does open up, and obviously that starts this Sunday. I guess, like you said, we want to see, like, a very good performance, like them winning, you know, at the line of scrimmage pretty much on every rep in this game to really take that step forward. But look, Kansas City's front is playing good football. George Karlaftis is a better player than he was as a rookie last year. We all know Chris Jones. Like, that wasn't like they were going up against, you know, a weak front. Steve Spagnuolo is going to throw a lot at you, and they handled it pretty well.
How would you grade Nate Hackett's performance Sunday, and how good does he have to be again Sunday for the Jets to kind of take care of business? Because I'm not sure, other than a couple of times where I felt like got a little cute not running the football. I know Zach was doing well, so it was kind of hard to go away from it, and they were down early. But again, I thought like they opened up some really nice holes on the right side, as we talked about every single week. They always run well to the right side. I felt like he was pretty damn good. He got quite literally every single person that all of Jets Twitter has been clamoring for involved. Xavier Gibson is involved. McCole Hardman played a little bit, although he didn't get the ball and whatever. But, you know, it was Breece Hall got more carries than Dalvin Cook, and Jeremy Rucker played, and they threw the ball to Conklin, and Garrett Wilson got 1,000 targets. Like, it's kind of hard to have anything bad really to say about, you know, Hackett's game plan. Even the drives that they didn't have score on, like, they weren't really three and out other than the first two drives of the game.
Yeah, I think the big thing was, and it goes back to faith in Zach, or just letting Zach play. You know, we obviously talked about not really letting him run on offense, low average at the target. The other big thing was, like, every throw was outside the numbers because they're just afraid to let him throw over the middle. In this game, he did. Like you said, the tight ends were involved. He had a couple other targets, you know, on deep posts or, you know, just attacking the middle of the football field. And I think that was part of his, you know, training wheels, was them just not letting him do that. Of course, it's more turnover prone. It is potentially going to lead to some disaster, but you have to do it, right? You can't just attack outside the numbers and just throw a bunch of out routes and comebackers. So, yeah, I thought Hackett looked good. Like you said, I mean, Garrett Wilson had about 2 steps of separation, could have had a walk-in touchdown down the right sideline earlier on in the game. Like, it was a good game plan.
Yeah, in terms of kind of looking forward to this week, Robert Saleh always says, you know, we don't listen to bulletin board material, we don't care what the outside, that's coach speak. I love Saleh. I'm a huge Saleh defender. I know he has to say that stuff because you don't want to be a team that's cliche on every single week having to find something, right? But, like, he clearly heard it. The first speech he makes in Hard Knocks, he's talking about how everybody else is getting hype and there's all these haters. So he clearly hears something. More importantly, it was a huge storyline. You don't ever, ever, ever see head coaches attack other coaches. It's good fraternity. That's why the Rodney Harrison thing, which I want to touch on quickly in a second, was such a crazy, like, former player is supposed to be like, have those, you know, have that fraternity's back. And again, whether you agree with it or not, it just doesn't happen. And Sean Payton's comments felt kind of out of line. They felt incredibly personal towards Nate Hackett for whatever reason. And frankly, they almost look worse under Sean Payton than they did under Nate Hackett, all things considered. And that team, you know, was supposed to be this amazing team, whatever. What did you make of those comments at the time? And how much do you think the Jets are talking about that and using that this week? Like, I feel like it's a real thing.
Like you said, it's not that people don't think this way, but you just don't say it publicly. It's just not the nature of how this is treated by, and obviously Peyton's been around for a very, very long time. Yes, he's a fiery guy. He has some quotes here and there, but I think attacking another coach and you come in and start 0-3 yourself, so, and get 70 points hung on you. And I know he coaches the offense and the offense does look better, but yeah, just a bizarre comment. And like you said, look, they're going to downplay it. And I think some weeks we probably make more about revenge games than others. Like, this was different. I mean, this was kind of an unprecedented situation. You're on the Hard Knocks, so everyone's talking about it. Like, you know, it's a big thing. I'm not saying it's going to swing the outcome of this game, but look, like, I think players probably do like Hackett. I know he's quirky. I know he's weird. I mean, you had a guy like Billy Turner who, you know, knew him before, goes to Denver, and then still comes back to the Jets and talks about, you know, it's not fair. Was he perfect? No. Were there some guys in that locker room that probably didn't like him? Sure. But I think he is a guy that has been well-liked at every stop, and I think there is going to be a little bit of extra motivation in this game.
Yeah, I think, if anything, you kind of say Hackett's almost too much of a player's coach, in a sense. Like, honestly, yeah. If anything, that's his, like, again, it's not Rex Ryan. I'm just saying, sometimes Rex's biggest downfall was he almost trusted his guys too much, and things like that. You know, sometimes with Hackett, it's like being stubborn because he loves Randall Cobb so much, or loves Elizabeth, whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like, those are the things where, if anything, those guys, like, The biggest thing for NFL teams, you come off a primetime game like that, it's a tough loss. There's usually a lot of either, like, you're fired up the next week, or there's, like, that big drop off of, like, it's not the same juice, right? It's like a little bit of a different game. It's an easy letdown. You're going on the road. I think that kind of makes up for that potential letdown factor is, you know, I've asked players in the locker room this week, and they're like, we want to win this game for Hackett because we want to win it for ourselves and we want to get rolling here. But, like, there's a little extra juice of, like, fuck this team, dude. Like, they came at our guy and there was no reason to do that. And we can feel a way about him. You don't get to like to say that stuff publicly. I want to ask you quickly about the Rodney Harrison thing, because of course now we're getting the pushback, and Sala again was very political about his answer, and Rodney's a good man, and Rodney Harrison got busted for roids and was the dirtiest player in the NFL for almost a decade. So I'm not sure like how much we want to go good guy. He was like voted the dirtiest player in the NFL year over year over year. Again, all that said, he has done a good job on TV for a long time. I felt like that shot was so out of bounds, and I came on the show last week. I crushed Zach's play on the field. I've never come at Zach personally. I don't think anyone's come at Zach as like a person. That felt like baiting to get a click, and I felt like that was very personal. Call him garbage multiple times. He sucks. He's not special. Like, dude, I don't know what was the point of that, especially after a good game. Like, you can rip on a guy if he plays bad. Zach played really well on Sunday. There was no need to do that.
It was bizarre for me to double down to where, like, credit to Chris Jones, where he didn't take the bait in any way, shape, or form. And like, look, he maybe, I guess, could have if he wanted to. I know the Willie Gay quote going around, he obviously tried not to say anything, but, you know, him laughing and saying, all right, it looks like a team that wants to run the football, like, that probably was some borderline, you know, bulletin board material as well. But that was the bizarre thing to me, is Chris Jones literally had a perfect answer. Like, his PR people probably were smiling in their office. And then Rodney Harrison goes back to the well, like, two or three more times. And then, like you said, like, you still probably shouldn't do it as aggressive as he did. But if he was 10 of 30 for 80 yards and four interceptions, like, okay, maybe we'd be like, all right, or being sensitive, whatever. He just had the best game of his career, a near victory against this team. It was the strangest thing. I get that the people don't like him, that, you know, whatever, he's bad, you make fun of him. It's bizarre when it crosses over. Like, clearly there's like a personal edge to it. And like, he's probably not a bad guy. Yeah, he's bad at playing quarterback in the NFL. So are a lot of people. It was bizarre.
Yeah, I didn't like it just felt like the double and tripling down. And like, I saw some people in New York sports, you know, radio locally, be like, oh, all the fans are mad at someone else for calling Zach trash. Well, they're fans, and fans are going to be irrational one way or another. And especially in New York, they're going to tell you the best thing ever, or they're going to tell you you suck. Like, that happens when you're nationally, you know, a national media member that's on TV. It's, you have a different responsibility. I'm sorry, you just do. So that's kind of where that comes from. I know I mentioned a little bit in the officials. I know there are bad calls everywhere. Like, what do you make of kind of this league-wide trend, I guess, of where this, you know, the officials feel like they're just way too much in all these different games? And again, all things considered, I know the rules are really tough to officiate. These guys are faster than they've ever been. The game's moving a million miles an hour. All that said, it's still your job, and you're still, there's no repercussion ever for these refs when they blow calls, whereas players doing stuff, coaches, whatever, they can't wait to find these guys and do all this stuff. Robert Saleh had a really good quote this week, and I'm curious your thoughts on it. He said, we can only coach guys on what really not to do, right? Like, we can't tell, you know, we can't get mad at the call, but if we know the way they're going to call a game, we can kind of figure out how we want to get away with it. He said, if an umpire has a strike zone for eight innings, you adjust to it. He's like, in the bottom of the ninth inning, they can't start calling the strike zone totally different. Is that kind of how you felt on Sunday? Because again, I'm not blaming the loss on the refs, but they did play a huge factor in multiple possessions of points and major. It's the biggest moment of the game. And it's like, why are you involved? Why are we still talking on Wednesday about the refs?
I think that's for any officiating of any sport, where it comes back to like, and we do it as a kid, even you realize, let's say football example, like, all right, this guy's calling a lot of DPI. So like, you know, don't be grabby if you're a corner. Okay, this is a game where you're going to have to, like, not be as grabby. Because, look, as Gardner said, like, I'm doing this on every snap. Like, when and of course, we talk about holding all the time. Like, there's probably – you could probably call holding on 50% of snaps as well. If you're going to be coming into the game, all right, I'm going to call a lot of holding. I'm going to call a lot of defensive pass interference. And that's a consistent theme throughout the entire night. Then you can't complain, right? As a fan, you say, look, it's annoying. It's a ref show. I don't really get why they're trying, you know, in prime time to impress Taylor Swift or whatever they're doing. And also, they were off on Monday night, too. The first half of the Giants-Seahawks game, there was a flag on every single play. So, and several of them were bad calls in both directions. So, that is the big thing, is like, just be consistent. Yeah, I do think in the first half, that particularly the first Jets scoring drive, obviously the horse collar was kind of a close call. But I mean, again, I could see it being called, you know, because it was borderline. But like you said, it was just like the ebbs and flows of the game and the ebbs and flows of when they chose to make their appearance felt were so annoying and off and game altering in a way that was just not necessary. I do. I don't love the, you know, like sometimes in the conversation, look at the Super Bowl with James Bradberry again, you know, against Juju Smith-Schuster. Like, oh, you can't call that in that moment. Look, like, I get the argument. I totally do.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The sauce one, like you said, though, the flag coming out super, super, super late.
It felt like it felt like LeBron goes up for a layup ending game situation, and they wait to see if he misses or makes it to call a foul. That's what it felt like.
I hear you. Right. Where the ball falls incomplete, you know, that type of stuff. Like, does it potentially change the situation there? Yeah, look, it's fair. It was not a well-officiated game. Like I said, I do think there were a couple that went the Jets' way, too, but obviously there were plenty that did not go in their favor.
I just found it comical that the Chiefs and Trey Smith both posted a video of the Pacheco touchdown run and highlighted him. Great pancake block on the smallest player in the Jets roster, and Jordan Whitehead. Right behind him is Jamien Sherwood getting Kurt Angle ankle locked taken for a ride. And it was like, probably wouldn't have posted that. I'm sure today the NFL always comes out on Wednesdays with their missed calls. We'll see a few. Yeah, the horse collar live. I understand it probably was a board, like, right. I don't call it, but live, like, it really looked like you're dragging your running back behind, you know, down like that, whatever. You obviously diehard Bears fan. You watched this Broncos team last week, and obviously whatever happened in the second half of that game. I'm more curious. You've now seen them live, obviously. You got to see them in a full game and, like, coming off a historically bad loss. Justin Fields only incompletion in the first half, who is not an accurate passer, was a spike or a fake Hail Mary, the Hail Mary at the end. How bad is this Broncos defense? Like, is it just Miami abused them, or are they just truly awful?
No, they're horrendous. They are horrendous, horrendous. It's probably the worst pass rush in the NFL. Obviously, they cut Randy Gregory today. So not that he's been incredible, but he actually did have three pressures in this Bears game. But yeah, they're bottom five person pressure rate, bottom five in pass rush win rate. I think coming into that game, they were dead last in both of those and did okay. But like you said, I mean, Justin Fields had a flawless first half. He had 8 completions on throws, 10 plus yards downfield. He'd had 7 such throws the entire season to that point. He threw 3 touchdown passes. He had 3 touchdown passes the whole season, and he had 231 passing yards. He had not had a game with 230 passing yards at all. He did it in the first half. I mean, this is a horrific, horrific defense. They have DeMar Mathis is our lowest graded corner in the entire NFL. And like we talk about grades and stuff, look, is the difference between the 95th and 98th maybe correct? Maybe not. Directionally, they're pretty accurate. Like, the guy's bad. Like, I think, you know, so like it's a secondary you can attack. Justin Simmons did not play in that game. I don't know about his status, but no, it's not a fluke. It wasn't Miami. This defense is horrendous.
Well, I guess to follow that up then, what are your expectations from this Jets offense? Like, what do they need to do to not only put up 20 and look the way they did? Like, this Jets team went in Denver last year and frankly was rolling early on. They lose AVT and Breece, and they kind of held on for dear life a little bit. Zach was very bad last year against Denver in terms of operating in the pocket, had that weird, like, almost self-fumbled them early on in the game. There's a bunch of stuff that happened, but they got out of there, and I never felt like they were going to lose that game. Obviously, I think they moved to 5-2 at that point. It was like, you know, you felt really good about the rest of the year, even though they lost their two best offensive players at that time. I guess, what do they need to do on Sunday? I feel like this is a game where, like, the first drive, I'm punching Denver in the mouth 10 straight times on runs and just trying to literally – and it's not against Zach. It's nothing to do with that. But, like, running off the right side with Brees, who's now off a pitch count per Saleh, I guess, as we're recording this, like, I would just give Brees 3-4 carries in a row and just be like, dude, let's just go score right now and, like, set a tone. And then you can kind of – you kind of, it's hard to come back from when you get punched in the face in an NFL game by the run early on. It's like everything opens up.
Yeah, I think the one big thing I'll be monitoring here is I do think Wilson, a lot of his success, not a lot of his success, but, you know, with Steve Spagnuolo playing a lot of man coverage, we had a lot of corners and trail technique, and I think it opened up the ability to throw a lot of back shoulder balls because obviously Zach just knew, well, I'll put it where my receiver can get it, and the DB is not even turning his head around. The Broncos and Vance Joseph are just going to sit in soft zone. So it's going to be a different game, and Zach is going to have to approach this differently than he did, you know, against a heavy man coverage opponent in Kansas City. But I think the big thing here, again, is, like, getting those tertiary players involved. Like, Garrett Wilson's going to get a lot of Pat Surtain. He's been trailing receivers this year. Look, he wasn't good against DJ Moore. He's really not having a year up to his standard, but he still is Patrick Surtain. So I think you're going to need to see, like, you know, a couple big plays from your Lazards. You mentioned, you know, the younger guys, Gibson obviously showing his speed, Mecole Hardman maybe a little bit. Like, but I also think a lot of that motion up front and doing a lot of things to move the pocket, and not even just in the passing game, but, like, get ahead of steam on a lot of these runs too. Don't ask your guys to displace. Just, like, use the momentum of this offense to just – because you really can, with a head of steam, just run it off the edge and off tackle against this team. Like, they have nothing at edge defender. And so I think you just, like, right out of the gate, spring a big one from Brees. Like, forget 10 runs. Break a 60-yarder off with Brees and go from there.
Yeah, there's a – you know, you see it all the time. When they run off that outside zone or they run power off the right side, like Tippmann and AVT working in, like, a duo block up to the linebacker, and then you have Rucker kind of take a guy out or Compton, whoever it may be. Like, there's going to be holes there. The Jets have to establish the run early on. And, like, if you play a bad team, again, the Jets are 1-3 too, so I'm not going to sit here and pretend like right now they're not considered a bad team record-wise. But when you go play a bad team, the worst thing you can do is give them life early. If you get on a bad team early on, they will quit. That's just – it's the reality of the NFL, right? And if you're the Jets, like, you have to send a message physically up front on both sides of the football early on. If you hit Russ early on in the game, he's cooked. Like, he just is. He's played much better this year. Kind of by, like, advanced metrics, I still think Russ is incredibly washed. But, like, if you hit Russ early on, he's going to fold. He doesn't want to run around the way he used to. He does not want to get hit. And on defense, the worst thing you can do is be on a bad team and have to try to tackle. We watched it with the Bears. You know, you watched it with the Bears last year. Halfway through the year, it was like, oh, they're not going to tackle anybody. Like, that's which is what happened. So what do you expect to happen on Sunday? I guess kind of we'll finish with this. Am I crazy to think, like, this is a 27-10, like, but it's, like, not a close game at all? Like, that's kind of where I'm leaning.
I think Denver is going to score a little bit. So, look, obviously a lot of their scoring has come, like, once they're down by a bunch of scores, but they have moved the ball fairly effectively. You know, it's a mismatch. Like, I think he's you get Mike McGlinchey's top five in pressures allowed on their off right tackle. You can exploit him. You know, Quinnen's going to get his on the interior. I do think the Jets are going to win, and I do think they're going to score above 25 points. I just think I'm seeing more of like a 27-20. And look, it could be a late garbage time touchdown, but they to their credit, we can make fun of the Broncos all day long. I'm happy to do it. They have moved the ball decently efficiently. They have also played no defense in the class of the New York Jets, unless I'm forgetting someone. But yeah, Raiders, Bears, Commanders. Yeah, this defense is a massive step up in class. So, hey, maybe you're right.
Yeah. We'll break it down a little bit more on Friday's episode. Appreciate you as always hopping on, and we'll talk to everybody on Friday. Make sure you guys are following Brad as always, and enjoy the rest of your Wednesday.
Justin Fields' fault. I watched the film, and now we look. Ignore my opinion. We've now seen like
seven different former quarterbacks like Kyle Sloter, Kurt Warner, JT O'Sullivan, obviously. Like, he was not the problem in that game. He actually threw an absolute pearl to DJ Moore. He dropped it, and I think that was – they were going to lose regardless. But to me, that was kind of the flipping switch of this game's going to get out of hand in a hurry once he dropped that ball. So, but all that said, yeah, I'm all the way in. I watch Caleb Williams, Drake May, and JJ McCarthy tape every single morning on Sunday mornings before the games kick off. I've been doing that since week two. So, yes, I mean, look, here's the thing with Fields. Even if he does figure it out somewhere, it's probably not going to be in Chicago.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. I was not a big Fields person coming out. I think CJ Stroud's hopefully changing the narrative, you know, with Ohio State quarterbacks. He's looked awesome. Turbo Jared Goff. I know people for some reason thought that was an insult. It's not. Look at Jared Goff's numbers. That's a Pro Bowl level quarterback. The Texans need that if they want D'Amico Ryans to kind of work there. But again, you know, I just Fields doesn't see that. Him and Zach Wilson have a lot of the same issues. Fields is obviously a way better, you know, runner, but it's a lot of the same issues. If they don't see the field well, they can't pull the trigger. When they do pull the trigger, it feels like they make the wrong decision. So appreciate everybody for listening. Again, two episodes out today. Make sure you guys are plugged into those. Enjoy the game Sunday. I'll be there, so I don't have to listen to the Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift nonstop jammed into my brain, you know, camera shots every 2 seconds. I don't want to get canceled by the Swifties, but good for them. I want to watch football and enjoy football on Sunday. So appreciate everybody for listening. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll have one more set on Friday. Take care and talk to you guys soon.